together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games.
Yeah, and today we have Corey Brotherson back with us.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
The long-awaited. Yeah, we had technical last
twice
time.
Twice in a row. Yeah.
So it's been a long time coming, the second part of the Corey Brotherson show.
I'm afraid my mutant ability to disrupt technology of all forms is pretty virulent at the moment, so I'll try and keep it down if I can.
Yeah, like keep that helmet on. So Drew, do you want to this topic?
Yeah, we are talking about Marvel Luke Cage.
So what did everybody think?
Sure, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. I thought it had a lot to do, and for most of the part it succeeded in what it had to do. I found that I think a few of my friends were a little bit on the fence. There's some of them thought didn't like the acting or didn't like the writing. And for me, I thought the acting was generally quite good. I thought the writing was a little bit, let's say, yes. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to describe it. Some parts were a little bit too on the nose. Some parts were a little bit too laboured. There was a bit of repetition in the dialogue, which I felt could have been smoothed over. But on a whole, I really, really liked it. And I'm quite looking forward to seeing the integration of Luke Cage and the characters from the series into the Defenders with the rest of the Netflix kind of Marvel universe, really, in that respect.
I agree. Overall, I really liked it. Like you said, it did have a lot to do. It had, you know, a big weight of expectation first. Black superhero standalone show film until Black Panther comes out.
Yeah.
So it had a lot culturally to. You had a lot of things to hit, as well as just a show in a long line of what have been really good superhero shows. So it had stuff to live up to on both sides. But I thought the writing was packed too. I'll probably go into that a bit more when we go into the sort of nitty-gritty, but on the whole I thought it was good. Enjoyed it.
Yeah,
all the point you've gotten to.
this is very literally a half-baked opinion, but yeah, like, I'm sort of agreeing with you guys on this one. I think that it's the acting is fantastic. All the characters are just so interesting to watch. Like Luke himself in particular, Mike Calder is just, he's so charismatic, so charming and watchable that it's difficult not to sort of get swept along with him. And the only sort of criticism I have is some of that patchy writing. There's a chess metaphor in the that comes up like far too often to not kind of stick out as a bit of a cliched sort of thumb, if you know what I mean. It's in the every time someone's sort of political move, it'll cut back to Bobby Fish moving something on the chessboard. when things go off in Harlem, the chessboard literally get knocked off. I got through the first sort of four episodes and I thought, okay, they're coming away from that now. But now that I've watched two more and they've gone back to it about three times, they've had Bobby Fish explain character motivations by saying he's like a bishop diagonally. just cool it on the chess.
Maybe they're a huge Ingmar Bergman fan.
It might be.
Just leave it.
The slightly cliched, repetitive bits aside, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when it comes to patchy writing, I did wonder if sometimes it was kind of a style thing, because they're kind of riffing off blaxploitation cinema. And so sometimes the dialogue was a bit kind of on the nose, and like because they were kind of sort of treading this line between being blaxploitation and being just like a serious kind of edgy TV show. And I wonder, was that, you know, I mean, sort of have he'd be in sharp focus back in the background, or seem as if they're really far away, and he'd be looking into the corner of the room, and then he'd say something really kind of on the nose. And I'm like, is that a stylistic thing that they're going for, or is it just chunk? I don't know if you ever felt that as well.
I think it's actually a fair point. I think with blaxploitation, especially kind of like as it's been dubbed neo-blaxploitation, there's not many examples out there that have really done it. I mean, a lot of people will look towards Quentin Tarantino's work, for example, in that respect. But his stuff usually is, he usually sticks within the era that he wants to kind of portray. Whereas this is one of the few TV shows, if not the only TV show that I can remember of recent times, where they've tried to take the blaxploitation genre and put it directly into contemporary settings. And some of it does feel a little bit jarring to that degree, and some of it works really well, and other parts of it you do kind of question, especially if you've not seen any blaxploitation more recently.
I think for people that don't know blaxploitation, don't see those references, they might just think, why are they what are they doing, what's going on?
And I mean, as someone who's not really familiar with blaxploitation films myself, there are arms where I've seen some of that stuff, and I'm wondering, is this referencing something I haven't seen, or is it because it otherwise sticks out? I can't think of a specific example, but that's definitely happened a couple of times over the course.
So that's like kind of a risk they took. I mean, I really loved the blaxploitation element of it, because I mean, the original comics, that's what they were kind of jumping into the zeitgeist, where they are black power and stuff at that period. So I think it was a good call, a reference point. And I suppose the music and stuff plays into that whole sort of reference as well. I mean, I think everybody's quite widely said the soundtrack's fantastic.
It really is.
It's phenomenal. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and I really loved the sort of whole different flavors of black dick that they opposed to just going, oh well, this is Harlem and the black people, it's urban, let's just do hip hop, like from start to finish. And I love the fact that they brought and different colors of hip hop as well, and jazz and blues and sort of all sorts of eras that kind of reflect Harlem time.
It was very smartly done. They really tried to diversify within that sphere, and it showed extremely well for a lot of the part.
Although there were some points where I felt music choice was on the nose. I mean, some people might like it and might feel it's booky or whatever, but was it something, because they used Son of a Preacher Man, and it literally someone who was a son of a preacher man. It was like, I can't remember the scene. It was in the club, and I was just like, really? And quite often they do that, where the lyrics were exactly what was going on.
Like there was in the episode I've just watched, in episode 6, is a rap track, Hail to the Chief, and he's like pointing at Cottonmouth as he's saying this. It's really sort of, this is the guy I'm talking about. This is what's happening here.
So I thought that was a bit odd.
I think in some parts it kind of works, and other parts it just feel a little bit too kind of like, you kind of start rolling your eyes. You know, the visuals alone really give this away. You don't need to have a music track where the lyrics are explicitly telling us what exactly is going on.
Guys, he's the son of a preacher.
There's a real art to getting that subtly done and getting it effectively done, and there is that line that can be so easily crossed.
And
I mean, I think what one of the things that it does really well is to Cottonmouth Club really sort of works as a showcase music, instead of laying it over things that, you know, the actual story itself, that in almost every episode there is a 2 or 3 minute section where it's just set at the club, and it might flash back and forth to other stuff that's happening, but the focus is on the music, and it's just a really nice sort of period in each episode where it's just, okay, here's the music track for this episode, not as if they're, you know, sort of showcased, but it works in a different manner in, say, what I assume Suicide Squad does.
Absolutely.
It's almost like the bronze in Buffy.
Yeah, precisely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of the club is.
Harlem's Paradise.
That's the one.
We forgot it last time.
I know, it's because I just got Cotton Club stuck in. Because he's called Cotton Mouth. I really like the club as well. It kind of feels out of time.
Yeah.
You know, at times it, and the barbershop as well. You know, just all those sort of black culture.
Yeah. The kind of cultural touchstones that they kind of use.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, the old guy reminds my dad's friends, like in Grenada, just chatting with their little pork pie hats on and putting worlds to right and talking about cricket and whatnot.
Yeah.
They were talking about basketball, you know.
That's it. They they kind of replaced dominoes with the chess and cricket with the basketballs.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I didn't understand any of that. You know, it's like the opening scene, isn't it, is about basketball for ages. And it reminded me of Do the Right Thing as well.
Yeah.
A lot of the camera angle stuff did as well, photography. And it reminded that Spike Lee film. So, what about the casting, I guess, about the casting and the character? So should we start with Luke? I mean, Drew's already...
I think just a great choice. I can't think of anyone who I can see in the role better than him. He's just got the poise, the attitude, Leslie. He's so charismatic and charming. I love watching him. He's on.
Yes, he's a beautiful man, so...
He is.
He really is. And he has a sort of vulnerability about him, huge guy, but he doesn't come across as he in that way, you know, as just a sort of a big lug, kind of, he's soft well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and, you know, he's quite good with comic stuff as well, sort of lightness, as well as the brooding.
Yeah, he's got a very subtle versatility to him. I think some of that could be quite easily missed in his performance, because his character in itself isn't a hugely divergent character in his personality. He's very much the kind of urban Captain America, as it were, of the ground level Marvel hero. He knows what's right. He always sticks to it, and he's very much got a strong sense of morality in terms of what he feels he must do. But at the same time, like you say, he has that softness to him. He has that vulnerability, which is always that nice kind of comparison to his invincible, hot, bulletproof skin.
And he's also, you know, likes to chat up the ladies. He never misses an opportunity to ask someone out for coffee.
Coffee.
And so that's nice, because he is, you know, like a real person, a real man, to have a life and have a girlfriend. Like, well, I've got this heroic stuff to do. I can't be talking girls.
Yeah, they don't shy away from the sexual aspect of it, and which is good, because it was the same with Jessica Jones and the same with Daredevil. They really made sure that you understood that these are adults essentially living in a very adult, dangerous world. And obviously the movies have elements of that to a certain degree, but they do try to keep it as family friendly as possible, whereas the Netflix series are quite happy to say, well, you know, we were appealing to a slightly more older audience, so here there's some darker themes here, and there's some slightly more adult themes which we can play with a little bit more.
Yeah, and it's just great for sort of exploring the sort of human complexity of those characters, and I think that's why I like the Netflix Marvel series so much more than I do the films. Not that I dislike the film, but I'm far more interested in getting into the sort of nitty-gritty of what makes these people tick than the films sort of portray it as. They go sort of more global with it. They are superheroes, and, you know, they might have a bit of angst about that every so often, but you never really sort of zoom in on that, and the Netflix series really do, which I'll...
Yeah, and what I also like about Luke is the way that he fights. I love the fact that he's got bulletproof skin, he also has food, you know, he's got like a martial arts king all of a sudden just out of nowhere. I like the fact that he just kind of pummels them and will pick up a couch and just hit people with it. There's no real finesse fighting style, and I really like that.
Yeah, he fights like he's extremely kind of like, you can't hurt me, why are you even trying? I'll just quite happily knock you out or flick you in the head.
But he's very good at looking bulletproof as well, isn't he? Just sort of stands there and you don't believe that the bullet would go through. It's like, no, that's fair enough.
There's no finesse. I haven't trained. I haven't gone up to some mountains to a wise person and trained for years. I'm just really strong, okay?
What's the point? I can just do this without trying.
Exactly.
Go on.
No, I was about to say, the one scene, actually, I think it was in the first episode, and they used that a lot in the trailers, where he's in the restaurant, and the guy punches him, and you could see the bone snap and pop out of the
like
wrist. The amount of times I've seen that, and I still wince at it, because it's just so exceptionally visceral in the way they've done it, and it's very, very well done.
Yeah, I suppose they do consider the fact that he's bulletproof all the time, and it becomes a real problem, just like trying to get a bullet out of him, you know, trying to save when, you know, he's damaged or something, or, you know, when they need to operate or whatever. It has its drawbacks, bulletproof kids. So what about the characters that he's got around him? I suppose Cottonmouth, Mariah, foil to his goodness.
Yeah, Cottonmouth, I thought, was extremely strong character. He was really well acted, he was well portrayed, he had a real sense of menace about him. But at the same time, he, like Luke as well, he had that sense of vulnerability, which obviously becomes a bit more apparent later on in the series, and when you get to see the reasons why he became who he was. For the better and for worse, again, no spoilers, he really is a massive credit to the series. So I thought he was exceptional for most of the part.
Yeah, I do. I mean, because you do empathise with him at some point.
I feel like you guys are dancing around something here.
Maybe.
Absolutely. He's going back to what you said about him being such a menacing character. He really is. He does that really well. The only problem that I have with that is that from what I've seen so far, when he is menacing, he's doing it up against Luke, and Luke's kind of just a wall to that. He doesn't care. There's multiple scenes where they're sort of facing off against each other, or not facing off, but in conversation and obviously in competition, where Cottonmouth is just trying to be as threatening as possible on anyone else. It would be a scary scene to sort of shrugs it off and walks off. It's just it's interesting. It kind of sort of undermines that character when you're... And this is something that goes through quite a lot of what I've seen of the series, is that there's probably tension because you know that Luke's not going to get, you know, shot. Whenever he squares up for a fight, it's difficult to get sort of that invested in it. You know that he's just going to stand there and people are going to come to him and he's going to punch them and throw them away.
Do you find way to deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Cottonmouth and Mariah as a pair, they are the ones that can undermine that. And I think you'll see, because you've got up to episode 6, it's the church speech, and you know, they... know that politics one way, he has the support of people, and if they can turn again, you know, that's one of them. I thought they were quite clever, because it's true. They have to come up with some clever, it's kind of like the man or something, that come up a worthy adverse.
There's definitely like foreshadowing, the stuff that is definitely going to hurt him later in the series, but they're taking quite a while to get around to that. I think like we're halfway through and they haven't, even though they've mentioned it, they'll say, you know, go after him, catch drown, they've got that, they've talked about that bullet which might kill him. It just hasn't actually sort of manifested itself yet, so I'm looking forward to that happening.
I think they do it really well. I don't know about
you. I think generally it's actually kind of, they do create a nice kind of polarizing element of, here is a guy who is bulletproof and is indestructible for a good part, to there is a danger here of some sort. I mean, naturally, you're always going to think, well, it's his own series, so it's a very unlikely chance of him dying by the end of it. But at the same time, you do kind of wonder when you get to that point where you're thinking, oh, okay, this is actually, how are they going to actually get past that element of physical danger that is actually present now, that is there? And that's actually a challenge that they'll have for the defenders as well, because there's only so many ways you can kind of replay that same element. So it'd be really interesting to see how they implement him into defenders without totally removing that tension, because Daredevil is a human punching bag for all intents and purposes, and Jessica is very much a drunk. So they've got their fallibilities there, whether they're moral or mental or physical, whereas Luke, you know, there's only certain things that can hurt him.
He is morally strong.
Yes,
So what about the women in his life? the show writes women well.
All the Marvels have, all the series have, I think they've done really well with that. Obviously, specifically Jessica Jones, but Luke Cage does it very well as well.
I haven't.
You really should.
I know, I'm building up to it because I'm quite harrowing.
It can be.
I don't know whether to watch it before Christmas or after Christmas. I don't know whether to spoil Christmas or spoil New Year, which is already grim enough. I suppose we should talk about Misty as the main protagonist show.
Yeah, she's I really liked her character. I think, you know, she comes across as a well-meaning cop who doesn't get too much in her own way, as a lot of well-meaning cops tend to do in these kind of genres, where it's kind of like they tend to be almost a block for the protagonist, as opposed to being someone who can work with the protagonist. And there are elements of that, but for most of the part, she's very much her own character, and she has her own motivations and her own reasons as to why she wants to do what she does. I thought she was very well acted, and they really have a nice little visual references to her comic book origins and her comic book character as well. Without spoiling anything, really, there's that constant element of like, oh, will she get a bionic arm or won't she during the entire series? Like she's in a comic book. So there are lots of moments where it's like, oh, she's going to lose her arm. Oh my God.
I know,
we're
like, she's
bleeding.
The arm is going. Just take it off.
looking forward to seeing.
You don't have to amputate her arm. It's quite a macabre fan sort of frenzy for the arm to go. But yeah, I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, she has a good character arc, I think.
I don't know how much.
I don't think I've gotten. I haven't gotten up to the low point yet. Certainly, what I've seen of her so far, she's got that thing where, I'm not familiar with the character from the comics. She's got this thing where, so she takes forward of the crime scene. She talks about this. She's like, when you have this, time slows down and you can see the. She makes references to being good at Where's Waldo. You see what's missing and you fill in the blanks from there. It's that thing that happens in a lot of hero media where a character has kind of low-key but interesting skill and you're wondering, is this actually a power that she had? So I was going through if she turned out to be, a superpowered detective or something like that. I don't know if she does, but it doesn't feel like it's going that way now. But she's just sort of fantastic. Like, I always love comp in any sort of medium. I really like it.
And I liked her relationship with
Scarf address.
Because I really liked him, and so I was gutted, when you have the big Scarf reveal. I was just like, oh my God. I was just like, because they'd built that relationship really quickly. I liked him almost straight away. They had a sort of repartee. Because it's not, halfway the Scarf reveal?
It's episode 3, I think. Early.
Yeah, it was quite early on, but I was really invested in that relationship. So I was really gutted when I found out that's power to the... power of the writer in terms of the character.
And like by the time his arc comes around, you're not on board with, you are sort of rooting for him to spoil anything as I'm going. even though he, really not a nice guy, he did a pretty unforgivable thing to I don't want him to go.
I think that was a great character. And Mariah, what about Mariah? I mean, I think it's fantastic. She's just so complex. As the show goes on, it gets more and more complex. She's always you just don't know what she's going to do next and what she's capable of. And her and Shay together, I loved Shay as well. I think he's fantastic. Like the kingmaker, isn't he, really? He sort of sees who's the winning side and then switches allegiances. But I really like him still.
And he's not shy about letting know what's going to later on in the first half of the season, Luke and Cottonmouth are in competition. He will go up to him and he'll say, "You are making stupid decisions here. You're gonna come out of this very badly." He's a really sort of upfront guy, which I
love him. I thought he's great. And his relationship with Mariah is brilliant because she likes to think that she doesn't need anybody, but she always has a right hand man. Who's a man needs to give her the sort of confidence or just give her that boost so that. Design, and then once she's homed in on something, she's focused on something, then you're woman.
I
think she's also one of the best sort of performances on the show. There's that the scene where they're doing a live news report with her and confront her about something that's happened. Seeing her sort of try to deal with that, it's really well acted. You can see in her eyes that she's struggling, she's searching for a way out, and then she homes in on kind of gives her answer. And it's not the best handle. She doesn't really sort of exonerate herself, but you can see her thinking about it. You can see her arrive at a conclusion. You can see her implement it. Just a really sort of subtle, and I really loved it.
It is, without doubt, I think the best actor there. One of the oldest, I suppose, got a lot of experience behind her.
Yeah, it really does show her performance. And they've given her a real kind of like a kingpin role in, Kingpin was in The Daredevil, really. It was where her her general kind of outlook and her general morals are actually quite forthright, and at least at the start, and you kind of get a real feel for where she's coming from, and it's not like her actual goals are wrong. You kind of sympathise and empathise that the fact that what she wants is actually for the people. It's her morals and her methods which get a little bit twisted along the way. And that kind of...
She's fatally flawed, really, isn't she? Because can't get away from where she came from.
Exactly. You see her motivation, but she's also sort of tied down just by her family ties, Nick, and it really feels like she can't get out of the position if she wanted to.
She can't escape.
No.
Yeah, and it makes her quite a tragic figure, which you can kind of empathise with her. I really love that, the way they make the baddie better.
Netflix.
They are the heroes of their own reality.
Yeah, and that makes them very effective, like you say, very effective in terms of actually relating them to the audience. And that's something that Netflix has done very successfully. Obviously, they've got more running time to be able to do that comparison to the films. But it does seem to be very much a hot topic between whenever there's a Netflix show, whenever there's a Marvel movie, that there's always an expectation that the villains in the movies will be somewhat half-baked, because there's only so much running time that they can dedicate to the villain compared to the heroes. Whereas the Netflix shows, they have 13 episodes, which can go a little bit too far, I think, in terms of the running time, in terms of the story and the plot. But as a result, the villains are always extremely well constructed, and you do get a real sense for them and a real feel for what they want and where they're going to go, and that they actually are human beings at the end of it.
I like Jessica Jones, I thought, did that really well, because it dedicated entire episode getting into Kilgrave's head, and Kilgrave is this really sort of terrifying, irredeemable character, and by the end of that episode, it doesn't change your mind on that. You're like, okay, he's gotten this way pretty sort of tragic. He's got a tragic back to his own, just twisted by outside factor. He's come to the wrong conclusions out of that. But it's just really interesting. They do spend so much time in the world that they can just dedicate quite a lot of time to the small issue, which I really love.
Yeah, yeah.
So what about some of the sort of cultural touchstones, how they wove in really current issues, which are becoming bigger and bigger issue by.
Yes.
they hit the zeitgeist, bulletproof black man.
Yeah, yeah.
In Harlem, and some of the symbols they based off Trayvon Martin, bullet hole. Were just some great and sort of touching moments, I thought, about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to not give anything away, because it does become more prominent as the series kind of goes on towards its end game, but. But the use of the hoodie, I thought, was a really, really nice touch. It's one of those things where they used it, and you see that they've used it, because it's almost impossible to be subtle about that sort of thing. And at the same
time, I think sort of Black America is at the point where they don't want to be subtle about it.
Yeah, yeah, which is more than fair, especially especially like you say, given the recent events and the following stuff after the election. But even in Britain here, you kind of look at it and you do feel like it is something that that's nicely touched upon and feels relevant even to Great Britain, in the sense of it being obviously not as prevalent in terms of the gun violence and the gun crime over in the States, but the hoodie, the symbolism of the hoodie, was still very much prevalent throughout the last decade or so over here.
Yeah, I agree. And and there's kind of, it's just incredible timing almost that this show has hit right now. It's a big development for a good couple of years. But it's hit that what feels like is the boiling over. It's just so topical based. And I guess, I don't know how it wrote stuff in as things were happening. I guess it kept an eye on. It just feels long overdue, and it's hit exactly the right time.
Yeah, they seem to sort of have a history of timing these things really well. I mean, obviously they wrote a lot of this after sort of the Trayvon Martin thing happened, so they were reacting to events, but like that's all sort of swelled up since, like you say, it's come to a boiling point now, so this has come out at a really sort of good time. And then when they did Jessica Jones, they released it at the point where there was sort of huge internet arguments about internet misogyny and the sort of spreading rise of intersectional feminism, and it just hit at the perfect point to contribute to that conversation. And they seem to have been really lucky in their time, like given how far in they had to shoot it, I guess.
It's actually interesting that you raised Jessica Jones, because that has become even more significant in the last few weeks, given Trump's rather controversial, shall we say, statements. And that element of kind of that really kind of vile element that under in the undercurrent of what is deemed as quote unquote locker room talk, which is not locker room talk by any stretch of the imagination, is really prominent in Jessica Jones in itself. That sense of abuse and subtle abuse and use of an overuse of power and power abuse is so powerful in its presentation. And watching Jessica Jones again after all that has happened is actually quite uncomfortable. And I like the fact that they can actually use topics like that and push them into the public eye, so people are more aware of them than they may already have been.
I'm
definitely looking forward to the second series of Jessica Jones, which I imagine is going to touch on this stuff pretty heavily.
I hope so. I really do hope so.
So no spoilers. What ending? What did you think of Big Villain and the ending?
I'm really self-censoring at the moment. So I there is part of me which I felt, it was kind of necessary to that the route that they went down to allow for a physical threat to be more prominent within the series. I'm not entirely sure that the way that they've done it was as serious as they probably wanted it to be. They do kind of own it at some point, and they kind of they reference it, and they know, they kind of almost put their hands up and say, we know this is a little bit silly. It is still a comic book story at the end of the day. But just kind of go with it. And to that degree, I kind of appreciate that. And I thought for most of the part, they've done quite well with it. I'm glad that the final episode wasn't a prolonged big fight, and that they get the fight done, and then they kind of have a nice amount of, okay, here are the consequences of everything that's happened up to this point that is going to follow through now.
And it's really nice and really exciting.
Yes, yeah, it really
did. Loads of exciting hints. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, they really want you kind of getting revved up for the next season.
Yes. Especially, I was just like, oh my God, that's so cool.
I was going to say, sorry, Drew, we're just teasing you here at the moment.
Definitely want to watch the second half.
I was like, we're in the books, and it really does go there. And there's a scene where there's like real comic science going on.
Yes.
Where they bring back that guy's past. And it's just like, I was just sitting there going, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go with it. And I think that might, as we both have that lull around episode 10 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And
you've
watched it, I think, show the first time. And and it is worth getting over that hump. You will put the lull, Drew.
Yeah.
But it's worth just being on through. I think I got to, I was like, it might be 9, is it 11 episodes? So it might be
13.
Okay, yeah, so it's around like 10 and 11. And I was like, oh, I've got less. Like, oh, well, I'm to do it and just get it out of the way. And then I was really glad that they really nail it at the end.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to watch a bit more of that this afternoon, actually, and just start pushing my way, because the end of episode 6 feels like the end. You're talking about this before the podcast. It feels like the end of like what could have been a season by itself, like a short. It closes off like all the major arcs from the first half of the show. So I without spoiling much, it brings to an end sort of Cottonmouth's reign of the show, if you see what I mean. But now I want to see the second half, because the way you guys have been talking about it, like, feels like it's going to bring in some new themes and explore those really well and explore the fallout of this. And it's just, that's really interesting. I think I'm going to press you, Dave. I'm sorry I didn't do it before we did the podcast. Would have been a good time.
We can talk about it at the beginning of 2 or something. When we're excited. excited. Is there anything you haven't covered, Diana?
Shade is really cool. I really like Shade. We did touch on this. Yeah. Sort of just great character and just so well visually designed. There's a lot of shots where they'll have someone standing in the foreground, Shade will be behind them out of focus, but he's just so recognizable in form that your eye is drawn to him even when the camera's not focused on. And there's a shot in the middle of episode, at the end of episode 5, where they're all in the church, where they're all gathered together, and it's like a packed church full of people, and your eye is just drawn to Shade, who is just sitting there in the middle of a huge crowd. And it's partly because he's the only white guy on that side of the church, but the shades as well that just draw your eye to him. Like, there he is, just sitting, watching, seeing what happens, it plays out, because he doesn't react to anything.
No, he doesn't move. You don't know what he's thinking behind those shades. The biggest poker player. He's a great actor. I just find charismatic performer as well. I'd watch him in other stuff. I don't know what else.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen anything else.
The one thing I was going to mention was, I don't know if you got to this point, Drew, but there's a point where they bring all the crime boss together from like different neighborhoods. So it's like, I don't know, like the Italian.
No, I haven't seen, but feel free to, you know, spoil whatever.
It's not really a spoiler, because it was just like a death scene, so they had the Yardi, Yakuza, and whoever, and they're all sitting around the table, and I was like, oh, cool, they've got the Cubans, and blah, blah, blah. And then the Yardi all says Wagwan. So I was just like,
It does come across a little bit of like almost like a Simpsons sketch. It's got all the gang stereotypes get together and say their catchphrases, and then that's about it.
Maybe they edited out the fat fur as well. I was just so disappointed because you never get Yard.
There's one thing that I really liked as well, and something that's picked up by quite a few people online, was Rosario Dawson's character, Claire Temple.
Yeah, I was just going to mention this,
She's, throughout her constant presence in the Netflix series, it's like it has become her kind of like ongoing origin story towards being the night nurse, like later on, perhaps in Defender, seeing as you got Iron Fist next, I think. So, and there are lots of, you know, in fact, she's actually probably more present here than she had been in the last couple Netflix series of Daredevil season 2 and Jessica Jones. They've really given her an actual kind of a stronger sense of character in this particular series. And by the end of it, you're given lots of little hints as to her kind of final destination towards her prominent presence within this superhero community.
She comes out and says it quite directly. In her first or second scene in Luke Cage, she's, I think I want to be, you know, the medic to superheroes. Mm-hmm. She's completely direct about it. I think they are sort of building that up. I think she's going to have a quite large role under that sort of auspice.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to that, because she's a great character.
Yeah.
And she has a nice rapport with Mike Coulter.
She does, yeah.
I mean, it's probably quite easy to have a rapport with Mike Coulter, I like Dunn.
Yeah, it's covered just about everything.
So, looking forward to you getting to the end, Drew.
Yeah.
We've got to do another show. We were too rubbish. So thanks for coming back, Corey.
Thank you for having me back.
Again.
I enjoy it last time, I enjoyed it the time before, and I'll enjoy it again today.
Yeah, it's great every time, so
sabotaging us, is that what the world is?
How much he likes us.
I'll keep on smashing up the recordings to make sure that I will always be here. It's my evil plot. Yeah, I am a Netflix villain.
Evil plot to take over Argue's
car. I'm actually standing in front of a picture of Biggie with a crown on his head right now.
Okay, Drew. Till next time.
Cheerio.
Thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of Argue the Toss, and why wouldn't you? You can find us on iTunes. just search for Are You The Tot. You can also find our RSS feed on our main page at gameindustry.com. If you don't use iTunes and you use another podcast player, that should work fine with it.
We're also on SoundCloud. Look for Are You The Tot. Our host, of course, is gameindustry.com. So you can talk to us via the Twitter page there, which is at Gin Lounge. You can also find us on YouTube, and Game Industry News is also on Facebook, on Google Plus, and all those good social media things. So give us a thumbs up, give us a like, tell us what you like. It's awesome. You're awesome for listening. Thank you so much.